Hello and welcome to Press TV's News Analysis. Coming to you from Tehran, I'm Marzia Hashimi. Thanks so much for being with us. Well, is violation of another country's sovereignty on purpose an act of war? Is the training of people to overthrow a government by a foreign state against international law? Is the setting up of bases inside a sovereign country by a foreign government illegal? These are just some of the questions we'll be taking a look at as we analyze the role of some foreign forces being on the ground and training anti-Damascus forces. And now there are reports that there are, quote, a good number of U.S. drones flying over Syria. Where are the lines drawn to respect the sovereignty of states? And if they are ignored, what should be done?
Up until Saturday, the U.S. government was known to have used drones to carry out lethal attacks in at least six countries: Afghanistan, Iraq, Libya, Pakistan, Somalia, and Yemen. And now Syria has been added to the list.
I assume that this is MQ-9, which was controlling over Iraq the activities of the resistance against the American armed forces.
The latest report on U.S. drones flying over Syria comes against the backdrop of U.S. efforts to get a U.N. resolution passed against Damascus, which in turn could pave the way for foreign military intervention in the country.
Is a policy, and the idea that this is purely being done to enable possible future action against the Syrian government.
So far, attempts by Washington and its allies against Syria have been foiled, as two veto-holding permanent members of the UN Security Council, China and Russia, say they're opposed to any unfair resolution against Syria. Moscow and Beijing are against any foreign intervention in Syria and say the crisis there must be settled domestically. All the same, the United States and its allies are stepping up pressure on Syria. Several pro-U.S. Arab regimes, such as Qatar and Saudi Arabia, have already called for military intervention to topple the Syrian government and establish what they call a democratic rule. Saudi and Qatari rulers preach democracy overseas, while they're already under fire for violating basic human rights in their own countries. Saudi Arabia and Qatar tolerate no dissent. Elections are rare. They are hereditary monarchies with no power sharing. Emir of Qatar staged a coup against his own father in 1995. Saudi and Qatari absolute monarchies preach democracy. Saudi Arabia and Qatar are said to be behind violence in Iraq and Syria. Saudi Arabia has also deployed military troops to neighboring Bahrain to crush peaceful anti-regime protests there. Scores have been killed in the brutal crackdown, which has drawn muted response from the Arab world and the so-called free world. Some analysts view Riyadh's and Doha's anti-Syrian stances as part of efforts to carry out U.S. and Israeli plans in the Middle East.
It's natural for Saudi Arabia and Qatar to try to implement the Israeli-American agenda against the resistance movements, Arab and Islamic resistance movements in the area.
Experts believe the escalating pressure on Syria is due to Damascus's resistance against Israel and its support for Palestinian and Lebanese resistance groups against Israel.
Well, I'd like to welcome my guest to the program from Washington, Imam of Washington, D.C.'s Islamic Center, Imam Muhammad Al-Azzi. And from Beirut, Professor of Notre Dame University, Eugene Dabus. Welcome, both of you, to the program. Nice to have you. Let's switch over to Washington and start off with Imam Al-Azzi. Now, let's look at the situation that's taking place in Syria. And we have, it seems, so many strange bedfellows involved anywhere from Washington to London to Al-Qaeda. When is it allowed for a country to enter another country like this?
Well, obviously, this is a violation of international agreements and law when you have drones flying over a sovereign country. The United States is known to have suffered very serious diplomatic reversals in its foreign policy in the general area. And this type of breaking news that it has drones flying. And you should understand these drones are flying at extremely high altitudes and may be out of range of the artillery of many countries. But it definitely indicates that there is, number one, an element of provocation to have these drones flying over the country. And number two, a signal that there is probably a larger military plan that is set to go into motion if the coordinates are right, if the political and diplomatic coordinates are right. In other words, it's the American government has on its mind some type of military engagement plans, maybe weeks or months away, with the government in Syria. And therefore, it needs the type of justification that it could present to the world. The U.S. has seen the vetoes of Russians and the Chinese in the United Nations, and therefore it realized that the strictly diplomatic offensive that it had hoped would succeed had become a failure.
Okay, well, let me jump in here, Imam Asi, because let me just jump in here, because of course what Washington is saying is that it's using the drones to monitor the violence that the government in Syria is inflicting upon its people, and trying to get footage of that in order to basically get the international community on board to stop the violence inside of the country. So let me switch over to Beirut. What would be your take on that, Mr. Davos, if this is what Washington is saying?
Well, you have to distinguish between the legitimate state security rights of every sovereign country, Syria obviously being a member of the United Nations. On the other hand, the principle of human security has been propagated and made major advances over the last few decades. We've seen this recently in Darfur with the, respect to Sudan, and more recently with Libya. There are legitimate international principles protecting populations against their own governments. And this is the case that the West is making. Now, that does not justify or trump the state security issues and the sovereignty issues. But we do have to see that there's a balance here, and that it's not just the government's right to have control over its own internal affairs, it's also the international community's responsibility. Now, having said that, is the U.S. preparing for war? Is the U.S. actually interested in negotiations with the current government? I would say no. The U.S. is not acting in good faith. The U.S. has never actually been interested in a dialogue between the different parties. On the other hand, I don't think that the Assad government is either. I don't think that they will go down in history as a country that tried everything to negotiate with their people who are disgruntled. So I would say the blame is on both sides, and I would call on the Assad government now to seriously start negotiating with the opposition and thus take the wind out of the sails of the West.
Okay, well, let me welcome our next guest to the program in London, from London, from the Syrian Social Club, Mr. Isa Al-Shaer. Thank you so much for being with us. Hopefully you heard our discussion so far. What's your take on what exactly is going on? Because the debate right now is, when can another entity, for example, what the United States has announced with the drones flying over Syria, when is it okay for such an entity to do what it's doing, and when is it not? Where is the line being drawn? What's your take on that, sir?
Our take on this is that there's two parts to this action. One is the act itself, and the second one is the motive of the act. And as your guest from Washington has correctly said, the act itself is a provocative act, and it's a violation of the fundamental principles of the United Nations Charter. Now, we urge the international community, as well as the Syrian, to put a to stand against this provocation, because such a contravention of the Syrian airspace, it will only agitate matters in Syria. Now, the motive behind this act, again, is contrary to what the State Department have stated. We see this as setting the scene for either a military action against Syria or creating a safe haven or roads for further arming of the militants in Syria. Now, this is not, as Syrians, it's not the road we would like to see. We would like to see an encouragement of dialogue and encouragement for all the parties to sit together and to resolve their differences for the benefit of Syria. Under no circumstances can we, as Syrians, accept this act of aggression against the sovereignty of our country. We also would like to remind everybody that the resolve of this matter is a matter for the Syrian people and only for the Syrian people. And the proactive approach of the Russian and the Chinese should be adopted to bring both sides of the from the government and the oppositions together to resolve the internal issues of Syria.
Well, let's look at that, Imam Al-Assi, what our guest in London, Mr. Al-Shair, just said, the proactive action of Russia and China. Let's look at what happened with them basically vetoing that resolution and not letting it take place. Are we looking at the formation of a new counter-block to some of the policies of Washington and wanting it implemented?
Well, possibly. I think even though the Western media plays up the interference of Russia and China in that particular geography of the world, but we don't see Russian or Chinese drones over such countries that may be at odds with Russian or Chinese policies. The fact of the matter is we're watching with our own eyes the news items right now flashing of these American drones that are being flown over Syrian territory or the borders of Syria with neighboring countries. Now, the American policy that it is America is justifying, saying that maybe they want to collect information here for purposes of helping in proving the case against the Syrian government that it is taking drastic military or maybe bloody actions against its own population. Well, you know, there are other hot spots in the area. The government in Bahrain is taking a very brutal approach to its own population. The government in Saudi Arabia is taking a bloody confrontational military position vis-a-vis its population in the eastern province of that country. We don't hear that there are American drones that are flying over there to try to make the humanitarian case that these governments are using their military and their armed forces against their own people. So the position of Washington becomes suspect, and it's playing a very selective game here. If it is concerned with people, are the lives of the Syrian people more precious than the lives of the Saudi Arabian citizens or the Bahraini citizens?
Okay. Let me turn to Beirut and get Mr. Imam Al-Assi. Let me get to Mr. Dabus back in on this discussion. What about that, the point that Imam Al-Assi was just making? What is the difference here? We see that what the Americans are saying, it doesn't seem to exactly play out if we look at the criteria that they're saying that innocent lives are being lost and they are concerned about what's going on, so they are flying over it. Why don't we see them flying over other countries, as Imam Al-Assi said, for example, like Saudi Arabia, like Bahrain, if the goal is actually to protect human lives?
Well, I think the U.S. has been very consistent, and it's been consistently hypocritical. But we all know that. We know the U.S. is only worried about human rights in countries that it doesn't agree with. But once you realize this, I don't think that the Syrian government is acting wisely. If they want to counter this, they have to call the Americans bluff, which means that they have to enter serious negotiations with a third party which has not taken sides. I would propose the Rhodesian Zimbabwe model, where there was an impasse, but foreign negotiators who were not on either side helped the warring parties find a peaceful solution. This is in the decade after the civil war in Zimbabwe was a very positive period as opposed to now. I would think that the Syrian government should point out the hypocrisy of the United States, but the U.S. has always been hypocritical. They were hypocritical calling for human rights protection in Eastern Europe during the Cold War and didn't care about violations in Latin America under the fascist dictatorships, et cetera, et cetera. This is not new. So the argument is not really that interesting. What is interesting is to see what the Syrian government can now do to counter the American strategy, which is very clear.
Well, let's take that to London. What do you think, sir, that the Syrian government can do at this point in time, as Mr. Dabo said, in Beirut, to counter what the Americans are doing?
I think the Syrian government position is clear. There is a crisis in Syria, and the Syrian government is doing its utmost to try and resolve it. There has been a new constitution being drafted. It's due for a referendum on the 26th of this month. At the same time, the approach of the Chinese delegation today and yesterday, meeting with the Syrian president and also meeting with members of the oppositions, is very much applauded. This is really for the benefit of the Syrian people. In order to call the United States bluff, we have seen in the past the U.S. policies on Iraq. We have seen the U.S. policies on Lebanon and on the Palestinian issues. And I don't think the U.S. policies could speak loudly about their support for human rights in the Middle East. On the contrary, they have always backed the Israelis. They have gone into Iraq, and they have set the scene that there was nuclear weapons in Iraq, and there was no nuclear weapons in Iraq, but the lies that they've come up with have actually set the scenes for interventions in Iraq. Now, from the part of Syria, I think Syria is doing what it can to resolve the problem. The constitution, which has been drafted, as I mentioned earlier, is a good step forward. And working positively with the Russians and the Chinese, I see it, and we see it as a good result for the conflict in Syria.
Okay, well, Imam Asi, there is a vote coming up soon in Syria, but it seems that the grounds are being set, basically. It's an all-out attack, not only as we see bases set up, we see drones now flying over the country, but also this media war that all is being waged against the Syrian government. What can be done to counter that as far as the Syrians themselves? What do they need to do at this point?
Well, you know, this whole conversation has two elements to it. The first element is the antagonistic policy of the United States in the area, in as far as it's flexing its military muscle and interfering in the affairs of other countries, not for the sake of the peoples of the other countries and their rights and humanitarianism and all of this other stuff, but strictly for the imperialist interests of a superpower. That's one issue, and it has to be put in the spotlight, and it has to be dissected and exposed to the public very frankly and directly. The other issue has to do with the internal affairs of Syria. The internal affairs of Syria is that the Syrian population, like the populations of all other peoples in the area, need a representative government. And the Syrian authorities so far have not, as far as the information that I have not been forthcoming towards their own citizens and opening up the political process by which their own people begin to feel that they are involved in the affairs of their own country.
What do they need to do, Imam Asi? Because I'm almost out of time. What do you think that the Syrian government needs to do at this point in time?
Well, it's very simple. There are identifiable Syrians of integrity, not Syrians who have sold their soul to the devil, and there are plenty of those, but there are other Syrians of integrity who have the interest of their own country and who have pledged a lifetime of resistance to the occupation of Palestine. And the Syrian government cannot compete with their background. They have to be brought into the political process. There has to be overtures by the Syrian government to their own people, knowing that they are not the number one opponents to Zionism in that area. There are others, at least on an equal par with them, who are as serious as they are in liberating Palestinian, because the whole issue in the final analysis, from the American perspective, from the Syrian perspective, from the opposition perspective, the whole analysis boils down to who is going to be supportive of the final thrust to liberate Palestine. That's the strategy of the whole issue. And if the Syrian government cannot recognize that among its own citizens there are people who are very sincere towards that end, it is digging its own hole with its own hand. And hopefully it recognizes sooner rather than later that it has to make amends and overtures and open channels with its own people.
All right, that's as simple as it becomes. I am so sorry, but we are already out of time. I appreciate all of you being with us from Washington. Imam of Washington, D.C. Islamic Center, Imam Muhammad Al-Asi, from London, from the Syrian Social Club, Issa Al-Cher, and from Beirut, Professor of Notre Dame University, Eugene Dabos. Thank you all for being with us, and thank you, viewers, for being with us. Join us here, same time, same place, tomorrow, another news analysis. I'm Marzia Hashimi, signing out for myself and all the crew here in Tehran. Thank you so much for being with us, and goodbye.